Well, it was about 15 years ago, my wife and some other adults from our student ministry team were taking a group of students to the hills of Tennessee. And we were going to be doing some mission work there in the hills of Tennessee with a lot of other churches and their student ministry groups also. And as we drove there, we talked about, you know, what's going to happen, how is God going to meet us there, what are the things we're going to learn, what are the things we're going to do at the same time. So when we got there, they split us up into groups and they each gave us a work site. And the work site that we were on was with an elderly lady who had lived in this house for many, many, many years. And we went to her site, and we were going to tear an old porch off, and we were going to build a brand new porch. Some of us were going to scrape paint and then repaint the house. And there's some other projects inside that we were going to do too. The lady that lived there was about 83 years old, and her name was Miss Susan. And you call everybody Miss in the South, so it was Miss Susan. And she was an amazing lady. Every day that we went out there, it was very interesting because she would pull in a group of students that would be working inside the house. And she would just sit and she would talk with them and she would tell them her story. And every day when those students left, everybody would be like, wow, that was amazing. And I was kind of thinking, man, I can't wait till my turn. I want to go in and hear, you know, what the story is. And you would hear glimpses of what was going on. So as the day I went in there with a group of students, she sat and she told the story. And she said, you know, when I was a little girl, when I was born, I was too young to even remember it. She said, I went blind. Had no idea what was going on. The doctors tried to figure it out. We went to the church. The elders prayed over her. They had evangelists coming into town who would lay hands on her and nothing would happen. Nothing worked. So she was blind all her life. She said, as I grew up, it was interesting. She said, I had a Christian family and they would encourage me, you know, to do more and to take, you know, new things on. I learned how to cook certain things. She said, as I got older, I helped teach Sunday school. And she said, and I just learned over and over and over, it was reiterated to me, that Jesus loved me. And I was still worth something, even though I was blind. There is still purpose for my life. And she said, so I found purpose. So she grew up, she ended up getting married, having a couple kids. And she loved her children. As they got older and they moved out of the house, they didn't move too far away in the hills of Tennessee. Most of the time when the kids move out of the house, it's about 100 yards down the road or something like that, because they stay nearby. And she said, as I got close to 80, I asked God this one thing. And she said, I asked him, just one time, I would love to see my children. I'd love to see a flower that I smell. I'd love to see colors that I hear about and know what they look like. She said, just one time. And she said, but Lord, you know, you've been so good to me that if you decide not to, I understand it. And I'm forever thankful for a beautiful family, a husband, a home I could live in, the ability to do so many things that I've been able to do. I can't lie. I'm okay with it. She went to bed that night as she'd gone to bed so many other nights. Woke up just like she woke up so many other nights. And when she opened her eyes, she could see. Can you imagine 80-some years old, seeing for the first time that you can remember? And the doctors couldn't explain it. Nobody could explain it. And I remember sitting in her living room listening, and the kids were just amazed. They're sitting here going, wow, God is awesome that he can do miracles like that. And the best thing was that she kept saying, it's not about the miracle, though. It's about Jesus. Because if he wouldn't have healed me that day, I was okay with the fact that he saved my soul. That was good enough. And I loved it because she wasn't focusing so much on the miracle. She was letting the kids know, hey, the miracle was great. Man, it was awesome to see. And it's awesome to be able to see my children and my flowers and everything now. She said, but I'll be honest with you. He's even greater. Because the fact that Jesus would have died on the cross for me when I was a sinner was enough. It was enough. So I remember that camp buzzed the rest of the week, just listening to kids say, is he able? That's amazing. And they were for the first time really challenged to look beyond their understanding of Christ. It was an amazing thing. So that's what we're doing. We're in this series called Prove It. And in John 20, 30, 31, it says this. Jesus performed many other signs in the presence of his disciples, which are not recorded in this book. But these are written that you may believe that Jesus the Messiah, the Son of God, and that by believing you may have life in his name. That's the reason for the miracles. Just like Miss Susan was saying, the reason he gave me my sight was to be able to be a witness to who he is. Not just his miracles, but who he is. And this word sign here means this. Something that points beyond itself to something greater. Something that points beyond itself to something greater. This is the thing. It's not enough for people to believe in Jesus' work. They need to believe in Jesus. Believing in his miracles will never be enough. But believing in who he is, that he's the Son of God, and acting on that will be. And that's what he's pointing us to. So we're in this series called Prove It, pointing to the signs and the miracles. And we have seen so far three different miracles, haven't we? We've seen three different miracles that we've been preaching on. David, our lead pastor, started out. He talked about, on Easter, a turnaround, the empty tomb, how Jesus died and he came back to life. And there's an empty tomb to show he was no longer there. What an incredible miracle. And then last week, we had our pastor from Springboro, Jared. He did the official son and how the royal official, 15 miles away, Jesus was 15 miles away, and he came back and he's like, hey, listen, my son is dying. You need to come back with me and do this. Now, this is the thing. He didn't ask Jesus if he was able to. He already knew. He wasn't inquiring if Jesus could heal him. He was involving Jesus because he knew he could heal him. And Jesus said, hey, your son's going to live. And at that very moment, he was healed. And then 2 weeks before that, we had our pastor of student ministries here, Nathan Jager, and he talked about Jesus turns water into wine because they had run out of wine at the wedding. And Mary came and said, hey, we're out of wine, you need to do something. And she didn't inquire, she involved him at the same time and said, you need to do this. And she told the servants, do whatever he asks you to do and it'll be okay. Now you remember Nathan kind of said, hey, we need a refill, right? And we all need a refill once in a while. But he talked about a 14-year argument that he and his wife had had. You remember that? About the gas tank. That Lauren doesn't like to fill up the gas tank at all until she actually has to. And Nathan doesn't like to get it below a quarter of a tank. And so we ran into Nathan and Lauren at an event this past week. And I was talking a little bit with him about that. And I said, you know, Lauren, I'm you. I mean, I let that gas tank go down and down and down. And my wife, like, quarter of a tank. And she's like, you need to put some gas in there. And I said, listen, you know, you have the mileage that says 3 miles left till empty, 10 miles left till empty. So I watched that, right? That's what we're supposed to do. And my wife's like, you got to get gas. I'm like, it says I have 10 miles left and the gas station's only 3 miles away. We're okay. It's going to be all right. Lauren and I even discussed that, you know what? You can go below zero on that. After zero, you know what comes? It's these flashing dashed lines, which means you have some fumes you might want to pull in right now. This is the time. But it was okay. Nathan wasn't bitter. It was all right. If you weren't here and you missed this, though, I want to encourage you to get the story. So if you'd like, you can just email Nathan here at njager@fairhaven.church, and he'll be more than happy to fill you in on this whole story, okay? I mean, it's a pretty amazing story, so you might want to do that. So we're going to run into John 5, 1 through 15. So if you could, take out your Bible, your device, if you would, and follow along. And while you're getting that out, I want to tell you a quick story. There's a billionaire just recently who had so much money, he decided he wanted to create this incredible pool. So he built this saltwater pool, and he put all these beautiful saltwater fish in it. And he said, man, people can come swim with the fish without even going into the ocean and see all this. It's going to be unbelievable. So he built this and he invited all of his friends and colleagues over and they all came over and they were swimming, loving it. And he said, all right, everybody get out of the pool for a minute. And he had some guys come in and they brought an 8-foot great white shark and they released it in the pool. And he said, now, this is what I want to challenge you with. He said, anybody who will jump in that pool and swim across, he says, I'll give them $1 million if they can get to the other side. And people are just, you know, they're kind of like talking among themselves. And all of a sudden, everybody hears a splash. And they all turn around, and there's this guy swimming like crazy for the other side. And they're all like, unbelievable. And this guy jumps out, and he's like breathing really hard and real frantic. And he's like, oh, and the guy's like, I can't believe you did that. That is unbelievable. I've never seen somebody swim that fast in my entire life. And the guy goes, I just have one question. And he's like, oh, I know he's going to ask me, you know, when does he get his $1 million? And he said, who pushed me? So today, we're going to be talking about a man in a pool. This man was trying to get out, but the man we're talking about was trying to get in. So follow along with me, if you would. John 5, 1 through 15. It says, sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now there is in Jerusalem, near the Sheep Gate, a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One was there who had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he'd been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat and walk. And at once the man was cured. He picked up his mat and he walked. The day on which this took place was the Sabbath. And so the Jewish leaders said to the man who had been healed, it is the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. But he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So they asked him, who is this fellow who told you to pick up and walk? The man who was healed had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Later, Jesus found him in the temple, and he said to him, see, you're well again. Stop sinning, or something worse may happen to you. The man went away and told the Jewish leaders that it was Jesus who had made him well. So, this story, man, there's a lot of things. I'm telling you, this could be a mini-series on TV. We could dive into this for a week, but we're going to just really focus on the miracles right now. So I want to kind of go back just a little bit, and I'm going to go back to verses 3 through 6. And I want to kind of point towards something so you understand this text. It says, there's a great number of disabled people that used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. And when Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, do you want to get well? Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down. This is the line I want to talk about. It says, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. Now, if you look in your Bible, most of you are missing a verse 4, unless you have a King James Bible or a couple other. There's usually in parentheses, possibly. But the reason for this is that the oldest manuscripts and the most accurate ones that they looked at, they said, we don't really think this is part of John's writing. But they think that was added in, they put it in there because they wanted to explain what verse 7 was saying, because it wouldn't make any sense saying, when the water is stirred. So this is what 4 says it was in there. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. So the thought and the legend and the talk was, is if the water was stirred and you ran down into that pool, whatever disease you had, you were cured. So that's what he was saying is, when that water's stirred, I'm not able to get down there to get healed, so I'm behind everybody. So that's my problem. So we go back to verses 3 through 6. And so here we have a great number of disabled people, and this is what's happening. Jesus is coming down for one of the Jewish feasts, one of the three major ones. And he's coming down, and he's walking into Jerusalem, and he walks through the pool of Bethesda. And now, this word actually means house of mercy. And it's kind of interesting that all these people were in the house of mercy, right? And it says that they walk in, and there's all these colonnades. Now, a colonnade is a group of columns that holds up a roof. It's kind of like a shelter so that you can sit underneath there during the day, or if it's raining, if there's a lot of sun, you can get some shade. So there's all these people in this area underneath these colonnades, you know, keeping out of the weather. And Jesus is walking through there, and you see here where it says, there are a great number of disabled people, the blind, the lame, and the paralyzed. And here's what happens. Jesus walks through this group, and he goes to one man. One man. That's it. Now, I don't know about you, but when we look at Jesus, man, we think like Jesus is the pastor's pastor, right? And so obviously, if he's a pastor, he's going to stop and heal every single person in this place, right? But he doesn't. I mean, now, I'm telling you, if I was Jesus, which is probably good for all of you that I'm not, but I'm just saying, if I was Jesus and I'm walking through there, this is like smorgasbord, right? Blind, lame, paralyzed. Get up, see, be healed. Get up, see, be healed. I mean, you could just walk through and tap everybody, and people would be going, oh my gosh, he's the Son of God. But he knew that's not how it worked. He knew that wasn't how it worked. So he walked to this one man who he knew had been paralyzed for 38 years sitting by this pool. And he asks him this crazy question. Do you want to get well? What do you think? Okay, so I need everybody here in Centerville, Northmont, Springboro, online, in classics, do me a favor right now. I'm going to ask this question, and I want you to answer like you're the invalid. You've been there for 38 years, okay? You have not been able to move, all right? Do you want to get well? Yeah. Absolutely, and that's exactly what he did not say. Sir, the invalid replied, I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me. Seriously? So we got to unpack, like, what happened to this guy? And honestly, when you see that there's a great number of disabled people here, I don't know if you have ever been in a culture of dysfunction. I don't know if you've ever been in a culture of hopelessness. But you know misery loves company, don't you? Misery loves company. And here he is. He is in this culture of hopelessness, filled with all kinds of people. And I'm imagining that there's not a lot of people going, hey, today's my day, man. I'm going to walk out of this place. I'm going to see. Most people are talking about their ailments and how, you know, life's not fair to them. The other week, I was at a restaurant, and there were these people sitting behind me. You know, sometimes you just can't help but hear people's conversations, you know what I mean? And then sometimes you like to listen just to hear what goes on in life, and I do a little bit of both. And I was listening to this conversation, and for 45 minutes, these people were talking about what was hurting, what was done, how they were feeling, and that's the only thing, and pretty soon, I started having, like, fake ailments. I mean, I was getting sucked in. I was like, oh, I think my knee hurts, man. I might have bursitis or something. I'm not sure. But, I mean, honestly, if you get into an area, like, have you ever been around people who are just real negative with no hope, or, you know, they just talk about the things that are going wrong and there's no hope of what might go right, and it just kind of sucks you into that where you start feeling like, oh, I'm going to start thinking like that too, and, you know, I'm not sure I can escape, and maybe my life isn't as good as I think it is, and this is where this man was, as he had fallen into this place that made him think that there was no way. There's no way this is happening for me. Not today, not tomorrow, not ever. And you know what the funny thing was, is this man was laying so close to this pool, and this pool of water was his salvation. If I could just get to that pool, then it would be good. But you notice, Jesus doesn't offer anything like that, does he? He doesn't say, hey, man, let me carry you. Let me carry you to this pool, and I'm going to get you in next time it's stirred. And he's not real pastorly with him, and he's not like, hey, you know, man, I'm going to take care of all your needs, and, man, I feel so bad for you. He's not empathetic with him. None of those things. He asks him the question, come on, man, just quit playing around. Do you want to get well or don't you? And what he didn't realize is that his salvation was standing right in front of him, asking him that question, do you want to get well? Not only can I make you well, but I can make you whole. And that water will never make you whole. Only what I can give you. Now, here's the deal. We live in a culture where we have this victim mentality anymore, don't we? We're all victims, aren't we? And you know what? It's all God's fault. That is the spiritual poverty that we start having in our lives because we really believe that we're the victim. And Satan continues to allow that lie to go and to go and to go and say, yeah, you're right, man, you are never going to get off that mat. There is absolutely no hope for you. God has turned his back on you. That is what you're going to deal with. Be that person. And here's the problem. People are defined by their issues. They allow their issues to define who they are. And in this area, I think everybody lost their name. You know, at one time, he may have been named Joseph, but then he became Joseph the paralytic. And then he became the paralytic beside the pool of Bethesda. And he just lost his identity. It was his issue was his identity. And now he was the blind man, and he's the guy with ADHD. And he's the guy who struggles with pornography, and she's the one who struggles with drug addictions. You know, they lost their identity, and they became their issues. They became their issues. You know what? There's many people who still have issues in life, but they move beyond them. There is a man by the name of Nick Vujicic. I don't know if you've ever seen him or not or know who he is. He was born in Australia with no arms, no legs. He is an evangelist, and he is also a motivational speaker. But when he was first born, Nick had a tough life. He was born into a Christian family, a family of believers who strongly believed that there was hope, and they weren't going to let Nick lie on his back for 38 years or 38 minutes by a pool hoping that he might be able to find something. Now, did they think that God was going to grow arms and legs on him? They knew he could if he wanted to, but the possibilities of that happening may not have happened. So they said, we're going to pour into him not only the love of Jesus Christ, but we're going to pour into him the hope that comes with that. Now, I'm going to tell you right now, when you hear his story, he struggled through school. He had a lot of kids making fun of him. He had kids looking at him and people, you know, going, what is wrong with him? And he felt really slighted by a lot of people. But look today. Because he followed Jesus, he has a family and children, which he never thought he would have. He speaks to thousands of people. This is him showing them how he can actually jump, and he's jumping. But there's tens of thousands of people. He has a ministry called Life Without Limbs. 1 million people, 1 million people have come to Jesus Christ today because of him in his ministry. 1 million people. Like, do you think his issues define him? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. And Jesus was not going to let this invalid who had been sitting there by the pool for 38 years do the same thing. It said, then Jesus said to him, get up, pick up your mat, and walk. Now, this was not a suggestion. It wasn't a thought. It wasn't a motivational speech. It was a command. He said, I want you to get up, pick up your mat, and walk. And now listen, this is so different than a lot of other of the miracles that you see. And it says, at once, like right when he said the words, the man was cured. It wasn't vice versa. It wasn't, you have to do something in faith to make this happen. Like, if you walk out on the water, I'll allow you to walk out on the water. If you go and dip in the pool, you're going to get your sight back. He's like, get up and walk. And at once, the man was cured. Then he picked up his mat and he walked. Now, I got to wonder what happened, because this man didn't even know who Jesus was. He had no faith. He didn't know who he was. But he knew that something was going on inside of him when the Son of God commanded it, that he was whole and he could get up. And he did. He got up, he took his mat, and he walked without saying thank you, without looking back. You know, he didn't even know. So here's what he told him. When Jesus told him to get up, he was telling him, you've got to change your posture. I remember a story about a couple who took a homeless man in. And this guy was probably only like in his early 40s. But when they took him, his posture was all bent over and his eyes were down and he wouldn't look people in the face when he talked to them. And they took him in and they fed him and they cleaned him up. They got his hair styled and his beard trimmed, and they took him out to one of the nicest restaurants in town because they understood something. They needed to change his posture. They needed to change some things for him. And when they showed the man again, he was standing upright, shoulders back, looking people in the eye. He was starting to understand, as his hope was given to him, that it was changing how he looked at things, and that changed his perspective. Because that's what we need to do. When Jesus tells him to get up, he's like, you got to change your posture. You got to get up. You got to change your perspective. Look around you. You've been laying there for 38 years. Everything you've seen was from that ground. Now stand up and look around and tell me how different that is. It's just like when your baby learns how to walk. You know, on the ground, they're all about, the world is all about feet and ankles, right? And when they can stand up, now it's about thighs and kneecaps. And they can actually see on top of coffee tables and things. And they can reach things they could never reach before. And that's what Jesus was saying. I'm going to change your posture, how you feel. I'm going to change how you look at things. So get up. That's the beginning. The next thing he tells him is you have to pick up your mat. He said the very mat that has been carrying you for all these years, because they probably use that mat to transport him and carry him around, that you've been lying on, that has owned you and had given you hopelessness day after day after day, pick it up, because it's no longer going to carry you. You're going to carry it. He says, you have to be willing to walk through the pain that it takes to recover. Let me tell you, if you get healed of something, it does not mean that you're not still going to have emotional things that are going on with you. It doesn't mean that Satan's just going to leave you alone and go, oh, well, Son of God's healed him. I'm not ever going to touch him again. He's going to still come after those things to make you hurt. He's going to still come after those things to make you go back and lay back down on that mat so that you can't move forward. If you were hurt by someone and maybe you had a messy divorce and it was really bad, you're still going to feel some of that. But Jesus is saying, man, you got to pick it up at some point. You've got to carry that and take that somewhere else. And he tells him, after you pick up your mat, you need to walk, because your history does not have to determine your destiny. Just because it's happened, just because it was in your life, that is not who you are. You are not that messy divorce. You are not that one bad decision that you made, because I've healed you. I've called you to something greater. So you've got to walk away from here, because if you stand here holding your mat, you're going to put that mat back down and you're going to lay back down on it and you're going to act just like you did even though you're healed. He called him away from it. You know, the truth is, for all of us, is that you can't change your past, but you can head to a new future. You can't change anything that's happened. You can't change 10 minutes ago, but you can change 10 minutes ahead, what's going to happen. And that's what Jesus is calling him to. He's like, get away from who you were. You are healed. Now we got to work on making you whole. The day on which this took place was a Sabbath. And so the Jewish leader said to the man who had been healed, it's the Sabbath. The law forbids you to carry your mat. Really? Like, right? Like, did they miss this? What's going on? Like, you're carrying your mat? Are you kidding me? How about, I've been an invalid for 38 years and I'm walking. When I look at that, I mean, how about who healed you? But no, they're worried that he was breaking one of their 39 laws that they tacked on to Moses' law. And that was offensive to them. That's all that they could see. He said, but he replied, the man who made me well said to me, pick up your mat and walk. So that's what I did. So they asked him, well, who is this fellow who told you to pick up your mat and walk? The man who was healed, he had no idea who it was, for Jesus had slipped away into the crowd that was there. Isn't that interesting? Like, he had no idea. Jesus came to this man, and he healed him of something that he had been laying in for 38 years. In fact, this guy had been sick longer than Jesus had been alive. And he took care of it for him. He's like, get up and walk. But this man had no earthly idea who he was. No earthly idea. Is that amazing? And so, as this man just gave them the information they wanted, Jesus came to him in the temple, and he said, see, you've been made well. Now, go and stop sinning before something worse happens to you. Now, people always ask, so Jesus was saying that this man's sin is what crippled him, right? And I would say yes and no. I would say no, because we don't really know that it was his sin. But we know that it was sin. See, every sickness, every cancer, every brokenness is because of sin. Because when sin entered the world, so did infirmities and sicknesses and diseases. and paralytics and everything else that happens. They said, stop sinning because you're healed, but you're not whole. If you want to be completely healed and completely whole, that takes following me. So stop sinning, repent, and follow me. Can you imagine? I mean, at that point, wouldn't you have just dropped to your knees and gone, yes, I'm in. I'm all in. Like, I did nothing for you. I don't know who you are, but yet you did this for me. I need to know more. But he didn't. It says that the man turned, he went, and he told the Jewish leaders, okay, it was Jesus. So now you can blame him and not me so I don't get in trouble for carrying my mat on the Sabbath. So he kind of throws Jesus under the bus after everything he did for him. But you know what? Every encounter with Jesus will have a response, but it may not produce faith. It may just not produce faith. And I hear people all the time saying, you know what, man, if I was one of the disciples and I saw those things, man, I'd be totally, I'm all in. I saw Jesus do miracles, I'm all in. But that's not the way it was. Many people saw signs and wonders that Jesus did, and they still did not believe. They believed in the miracle, but they didn't believe in the miracle maker. You know what? Today, God is calling to us. Because I'll guarantee you, there are people out here that have been laying on their mat with some type of issue. And I'll guarantee you that that issue has defined you over and over and over and over again. And it may be a public definition where everybody knows. It may just be a private one where you are living out your issue and you don't even know who you are anymore. But I'm telling you, today, Jesus has come to your mat and he said, get up, pick up your mat and walk. It's time to quit sitting in that same place, having that same problem over and over and over. And you have that same conversation over and over and over. And you tell the counselor that same problem over and over and over. Because here's what happened. You may have been healed or challenged to stand up, but you haven't picked up your mat. Your mat's still carrying you. You may not have walked away because you're still standing there because your history is your destiny in your mind because there's nothing better for you. There's no way that God is going to take you beyond it. But I'm here to tell you today that God is calling you to pick up your mat and go. Whatever that struggle is today, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes just for a moment. Bow your heads. And I want you to hear this, that Jesus is calling you. He wants to heal you. He not only wants to heal you, but he wants to make you whole. So maybe if you're like this paralytic today and you've come here and you've never, ever said yes to Jesus, maybe it's time. Maybe you already have said yes to Jesus, but you haven't picked up your mat, you haven't walked into the place that God wants you to walk, but you need to and you're struggling with that. I'm telling you today, Jesus will meet you in this place. And he'll help you start taking that step to that next place in your life because he wants you to be whole. And maybe there's an issue like Nick Vujicic, and he just is not going to heal this, but he's going to give you the strength to walk through it and not to be your issue, but to be a witness for him everywhere you go. We're going to give you a chance to do that today because there'll be people up here that will pray with you after this service is over. And they'll help you walk through that. So Jesus, we want to thank you. Because we would be still laying on our mats today if it weren't for you. If you hadn't given your life on the cross, we would have no one to heal us. Not just from our physical and our emotional, but for our spiritual. And Lord, I know there are people sitting out today that they're struggling with some of their issues, and their issues are defining them, and the circles that they're running in are the people who are the naysayers saying that it's never going to happen for you. Just lay back and accept it. But God, you're not a God who has us lay back and accept things. So Father, I pray that you'd be working in people's hearts. Lord, as we have seen your miracles that point to you, God, let us be your witnesses in this world, because we have seen, we have experienced, and we have believed. And now don't let us just sit here with that. As you speak to us, God, let us do something with what you've told us today. Don't let us fold our notes up and put them back in our Bible and never see them again. But let us act on the things that you've taught us today. God, may we be your witnesses in this world. As I think of Miss Susan, as she tells her story over and over again, let us be people who tell our story over and over again, that we are people who speak life and truth and grace into others, that they might find hope in Jesus Christ. Father, thank you for meeting us here. Holy Spirit, thank you for teaching us. Thank you for guiding us. We love you, and we just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.